This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Superstar Frank Morano. A lot to get to this hour. We're going to get to Noam Layden coming up in about 24 minutes. I have been negligent in servicing the phones, which I hate to do, but I get in my little tangents. So I'm going to make an effort to avoid any lengthy monologues this hour and take your phone calls at 800-848-9222. It is going to be a potentially rough Monday for President Trump today. He's going to be in the courtroom this morning as Judge Juan Merchan decides whether to start the trial in his New York criminal case brought by Alvin Bragg. He'll also face the final deadline for putting up a bond in his New York fraud case with the prospect of asset seizure by New York's Attorney General Letitia James. The prospect of those two cases, technically unrelated, but colliding, could crystallize two of President Trump's big problems, which is a proud history of avoiding criminal prosecution. And obviously, you know, he doesn't want to be in a position where the government is seizing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of his assets. So he's spent the days ahead of the bond deadline blasting the case on social media and claiming that the $454 million judgment is a shocking number, which I agree with. Trump's bank accounts and personal property are probably likely first on the line if Letitia James starts seizures. And Trump's best news last week was the successful vote on Truth Social's parent company going public. That may not save him for today. He can't, as of now, sell his shares for 6 months or use them as collateral unless he gets the board to change the rules. Now, I wouldn't think that that would be too difficult because you know who's on the board? Donald Trump Jr. and other allies of his. So there's no reason they couldn't unlock his stock if he needed to use that stock for collateral or let him sell it. And that potentially adds another $3 billion to his net worth. But honestly, you're going to be hearing about Trump all day today, so I don't know that I have anything else to add on that front. I'm going to bounce around on a few different things, but primarily I'm going to take your calls at 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Matt Blaze, did you try that cake in there that my cousin Deanna made?
I did.
What did you think?
Pretty excellent.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, really.
Tony, did you try it?
No, I'm going to give me a piece when I...
Do you like peanut butter?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay.
Then I like Jif peanut butter. Not Jiffy, but Jif.
Well, anyway, we were at, you know, Wednesday is my wife's birthday. You know whose birthday it is tomorrow? 70 years old? Curtis Sliwa. Curtis Sliwa is 70 years old, so send any gifts to the radio station. Send it to my attention just to make sure they're properly vetted. Deanna made this great birthday cake for my wife when we were at my dad's for Palm Sunday yesterday. So she's talking to me about this story, which is right up my alley, and I hadn't seen it. I said, you got to send me this. Sure enough, I found it fascinating. Have you ever thought about how you think? Do you ever tell yourself, don't forget the milk before you leave home? And at the end of the day, when you get home without it, you say to yourself, how could I have forgotten that? Then, if that happens to you, you likely have an internal dialogue going on in your head throughout the day. Does that happen to you? Do you talk to yourself silently throughout the day? I have to tell you, I am talking to myself constantly throughout the day. Sometimes someone will walk in on me and I am actually sometimes responding to myself in words. I mouth the words. I don't speak them aloud, but I'll actually respond mouthing the words. And it's quite a weird sight because people see I'm not talking to anyone, but I'm talking to myself. All day long, I am having an internal dialogue. Well, it turns out it's not uncommon to use language-based chatter. This is an article in HowStuffWorks.com. It's not uncommon to use language-based chatter to organize and focus your thoughts. Thank goodness it's not unusual because I do it all day. However, some people don't have this kind of inner conversation at all. Instead, they may rely more on visualization. For instance, seeing themselves buying the milk at the store. Others employ a combination of these techniques. So they take a look in this article, which I'm going to share on my Facebook page at facebook.com/MoranoFan, at the inner voice. What is the inner voice? Studying inner speech. What causes an internal monologue? And then basically managing your internal dialogue. I thought it was such an interesting article because honestly, I just assumed that everybody had this, that everybody had an inner dialogue all day long. And apparently, according to this piece, and you can read it, it's from November, but it's still very relevant, about 25 to 30% of people don't. Say they don't have an inner monologue with themselves or an inner dialogue with themselves, which I think is really surprising. I thought that was really wild. So that's that. All right. And obviously, you're welcome to join the Facebook group as you like and comment on anything we've done on this on the program thus far. Let me begin with Gary in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Hi, Gary.
Hi, I'm going to talk about Sergeant Slaughter in a second, but I do want you to know to your producer, with Kung Fu Fighting in that last song, if you can dig up Ragmup, you guys would love it. Sergeant Slaughter, way back when, I'm 60 years old, when I was about 22, when he said, Iron Sheik, I declare war on you. I mean, it just brought chills all over your body. Now, I broke away from wrestling when I was about 20 years old because I'm an adult. Now I'm starting to work and all that. But you just taught me something. I had no idea that he became a bad guy and pledged allegiance to Saddam Hussein.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was so much, you know, what happened, and this is, you know, this is 33 years ago, but what happened was stations which were carrying WWF programming at the time were dropping it. Sponsors were dropping them. It was really controversial and a lot. And, you know, I still think maybe it went a little too far, but I actually think it would have been a bigger draw. See, what McMahon, I don't want to spoil the documentary because I want people to see it if they're interested in it. But I think it would have been actually more effective if rather than just have Sergeant Slaughter come back as a bad guy, he had him come back kind of like what happened with Macho Man Randy Savage, where they were allies in WrestleMania 5. They were tag team partners. And then Sergeant Slaughter turns on him. And I think that would have been more effective in terms of building drama rather than go the Iraq route, which a lot of people didn't buy. And, you know, it's so funny because Sergeant Slaughter's manager, supposedly in that, you know, bit was General Adnan, who, you know, again, if people don't remember this, and then I'll move on. I appreciate you bearing with me here. Here's General Adnan debuting as Sergeant Slaughter's manager.
Now, you other scums, listen up. For weeks now, I've been telling you maggots, you need a leader. I've been telling you pukes, you need someone to tell you what to do. free.
Well, I guess we didn't have the portion where he introduces General Adnan, but General Adnan went to school in real life with Saddam Hussein. And so what they did, he was a real wrestler in Iraq, grew up with Saddam Hussein. And what they did was they took photos of Adnan when he was younger, palling around with Saddam Hussein, and then they plastered them off all over WWF television. And then they took photos of Sergeant Slaughter and General Adnan and put Saddam Hussein in the photos. And people just went crazy seeing this. And there were boycotts. There were articles saying that they had gone too far. And it was very controversial. You remember this, Matt Blaze? Were you watching back then?
Yeah, I remember all that. When he became the bad guy to and aligning with the Iron Sheik and Adnan.
Well, against, right. They didn't call him the Iron Sheik. Right, they called him Colonel Mustafa.
Yeah, Mustafa. Yeah. Was a pretty big deal, especially coming off of G.I. Joe and everything that he was doing before that. Because when he turned from heel to face the first time, when he went against the Iron Sheik, it was when the whole thing had happened with Iran.
Right, wrestling always follows world affairs.
But I remember the way it happened because they were walking. One was coming in, one was coming out of the ring, and they were facing off each other, the Sheik and Slaughter. And that's when he turned face. So then coming in as aligned with Saddam Hussein, it was a big deal. And I went to go see Sergeant Slaughter at a signing, like not long after all that, when he had already come back to being Slaughter. And my friends and I, we went to the sporting goods store in Orange, Connecticut, so not far from Stanford. And the line was outside the store, around the block, all the way around the store, up the aisle, and there was Slaughter sitting at a table in the back of the store signing autographs.
Oh, no, I'm not surprised. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But yeah, Gary, that was a big deal. He was absolutely aligned with Iraq and Saddam Hussein.
That's terrible. I mean, obviously put a lot of ching ching in his pocket, but I mean, let's face it. I'm sure there was death threats and so forth. But if I may say one thing, I said this to you before. At 60 years old, my biggest thrill was when I was 23 years old, fifth row to ringside, 4-on-4 tag team, and the last guy that was introduced at the Boston Garden was Andre the Giant.
Wow.
And I was fifth row, the ringside, at 7'5", 500 pounds. I was scared out of my mind. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate that. 800-848-9222. Hey, do you remember, there's a lot of stuff that I wanted to get to. These Sergeant Slaughter conversations are you know, rough. Do you remember Sonny Delight? If you watched television in the 90s or you were a young person in the 90s, which I was, I enjoyed Sonny Delight. I thought it was, I don't think I would like it now because I really don't, I've lost my, with the exception of peanut butter, I really don't like anything that's too sweet. And I think it would probably be too sweet for me. But these Sonny Delight commercials were ubiquitous in the 90s.
OJ, purple stuff, Sonny Delight.
Sonny Delight, right here.
What's in this?
Tastes like orange and tangerine.
Yeah, lime.
Some healthy junk, too.
Whoa.
What are you doing?
Thirsty.
What? Say
something. Problem, guys?
No. Way to be Mr. Jackson.
Excellent.
Right, come on. Yes,
Sonny Delight, the good stuff kids go for.
Yeah. Who wants some more?
So it was sweet and it was good tasting, but they billed it as if it was a health drink. So The Hustle has a really interesting article about this, and it brought me right down memory lane because I remember that commercial. You see the kid in the refrigerator. We've got soda, OJ, purple stuff. And then he says, all right, Sonny D. In fact, it was satirized by one of my favorite animated shows, Family Guy.
Let's see. We got soda, purple stuff. Oh, Sonny D. All right.
So the ad finishes with that line, the good stuff kids go for. And in the late 90s, the ad agency, Saatchi & Saatchi, created a more festive version of the ad for the holidays. Instead of kids, the thirsty athletes would be snowmen. And instead of gathering around a picnic table, they'd drink the juice in their white, rotund forms, and they would turn orange with delight. They would go from being white snowmen to orange. And what started out as a bit of festive fun would turn into a scandal. And this is all in, I didn't know about any of this. I learned all about this from this article in The Hustle. 2 days after Christmas in 1999, on the cusp of Y2K, a news story broke. A doctor in Wales said he'd just seen a five-year-old patient at the hospital. Her skin, he said, was orange. The culprit? Sunny Delight. And it was spectacularly bad timing because the ad, which was meant to be playful, had these snowmen turning orange. And then now it looks to parents like a confirmation. Wait a minute. A doctor saying drinking Sunny Delight is turning them orange, and there's a commercial showing turning them orange. So today, the girl's story is the stuff of urban legend. Well, was it real? And even if she was, if it wasn't, why did her story change the future of Sunny Delight forever? Because there are 4 milligrams of beta carotene in a carrot. There's 15 milligrams of beta carotene in an egg yolk, 25 milligrams of beta carotene in a sweet potato, 82 milligrams in an 8 ounce glass of orange juice. In an 8 ounce bottle of Sunny Delight, there's 284 milligrams of beta carotene. In a 1.5 liter jug, there's 1,800 milligrams. The recommended daily amount for a healthy four-year-old, 400 milligrams. So this was marketed as a fruit juice, but it contained mostly water and corn syrup, but it was also cheaper than juices like Tropicana. So it was very appealing for parents. And so after the scandal, the company's UK sales dropped by a third, and news of the little girl's plight landed in newspapers all over the U.S. And in the U.S., the story only added to an already embattled industry. People were turning away from sugar, and what was once a busy parent's dream, selling out of supermarkets, had turned into a public relations nightmare. In the year 2000, there were three, according to the Wall Street Journal, $314 million of sales of Sunny D every year. By 2014, that fell to $189 million. And this scandal signaled the start of a years-long struggle for this company. In the U.S., they launched a Strongest Kid in America contest. But the finals, which saw 10 kids flown to New York to compete for the title, were disrupted by the September 11th attacks. The same year, the parent company, Procter & Gamble, was set to enter into a partnership with Coca-Cola, which would include Sunny Delight, Minute Maid orange juice, and a whole bunch of things. And the next year, Florida's Department of Citrus began a campaign to expose what they called Sunny Delight's fraudulent marketing. And they started even a website, sunnydeception.org. So it basically, this scandal of the little girl turning orange is now going to be the subject of a documentary. But they still don't necessarily know. They tracked down, The Hustle tracked down Dr. Duncan Cameron, the doctor quoted in the old stories. He's the only person mentioned by name in this entire kerfuffle, and he still works as a pediatrician in Wales, and he didn't return any of The Hustle's emails. The girl always remained anonymous. Eventually, the reporter for The Hustle found a number for Dr. Cameron in a church bulletin his wife writes for their local parish. The reporter called and left a message, never heard back. And at last, she found an audio clip of the doctor from an episode of the BBC's Money program in 2003, which seemed closer to proof that the patient story was real after all. So no one knows for sure, but they think this story of Sunny Delight turning a girl orange was real. I thought that was wild that this story of turning a girl orange brought this whole decline of this mighty juice empire. That it was really interesting. 800-848-9222. Lisa is in Connecticut. What's on your mind, Lisa?
Hey, so I'm going down memory lane with your whole thing today. WWE, obviously, is in Connecticut. I did a temp assignment there, and I was actually in the running to be Stephanie McMahon's personal assistant before I started my music career way, way back. And I worked at Procter & Gamble, too, around that time.
Oh, really?
And Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah, and Sergeant Slaughter used to be over here in Connecticut all the time. And I heard Matt talking about Orange. And, yeah, I remember him being in West Haven. He used to do cancer benefits, stuff like up here all the time. With William Ravis, who was in Norwalk doing a cancer benefit at one time. And he was always around. So I figured that he was from Connecticut. And then I looked it up, and he was from Detroit originally, I found out.
So yeah, he grew up in Minnesota. He grew up in Minnesota, but he which is how he got to be trained by Vern Gagne. But yes, he was from Detroit originally.
I got to check out the documentary.
Yeah, I think you're going to like it. You got to let me know what you think.
Did
Definitely.
You try any of those recipes, or did you cook or anything?
No, I we actually ended up going to my friend that I often go to on Fridays, but and then Good. we ordered Friday, so I was off the hook in terms of cooking Friday. But I imagine I'll be up and doing that probably Wednesday of this week.
Maybe try that pasta salad, that the tuna salad.
It's on my list, Lisa. It is on my list. Thank you. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Jay is in Ohio. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Frank. I'm very familiar with Sunny Delight, Procter & Gamble product. They create a need, and they fill it. They re-engineered the potato chip with Pringle, and I was a test person on a lot of their food programs. I went to school with a lot of kids. Their parents worked for Procter & Gamble, and they created those products, and they would test them out on people, and they'd bring them to class. I had Pringles in the early 60s before they hit the market. And Sunny Delight's one of those things like Choc-Cola. It's a drink that's not chocolate milk, looks like it, and they market it like that, and it's not orange juice, it's not healthy, it's not good for you. I don't drink soda pop, and I still have all my teeth at 66 years old, Frank.
Wonderful. Well, I mean, do most people lose their teeth by 66?
They're amazed with me because I go to the dental clinic at UC Raymond Walters, and they look at me and they say, wow, look at this guy.
You got to talk to Tony and Matt Blaze because they have not been to the dentist since Jack Tunney was president. I mean, really, they are in need of a dental cleaning like you wouldn't believe. They can learn a thing or two from you, Jay. 800-848-9222. Got to mention this before we get to Noam Layden. Elmo. Who obviously his use of Twitter recently made a great deal of news. He's now doing a mental health PSA video suggesting that people hum, H-U-M, for their well-being. So in this first video, in which Elmo highlights the benefits of humming for emotional well-being, along with friends including Big Bird, Ernie, Cookie Monster, Bert, and Oscar, was released on Thursday, and the second one is going to be out in May. I have to show this to my son because he really likes Elmo. But here's a little bit of Elmo talking about the importance of humming to improve mental health.
Elmo's daddy taught him that when he has a big feeling like being frustrated, humming a song can help you feel better. We all have big feelings, and we are all here for one another. Move your mind.
So there you go. Elmo is trying to help people hum their way to mental health. I don't know, honestly, if that's effective in terms of improving mental health, but that's what Elmo is putting out there. All right, we'll talk with Noam Layden in a moment, get an idea what is in the news from him, and then we'll continue with your calls throughout the hour. 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This is Greg Kelly. To my friends in the construction business, if you've been injured on the job, make just one call to the Construction Accident Lawyers at the law offices of Darren T. Moore. With hundreds of 5-star reviews, they fight for more justice for every client and have secured millions of dollars in compensation for New York construction workers. Call 888-444-ATTY. That's 888-444-2889 for a free consultation. More diligence, more persistence, and more justice. Prior results don't guarantee similar outcomes.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Once in a lullaby. Somewhere
33 minutes after the hour. This is the Other Side of Midnight. That's the great Judy Garland singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, a birthday bumper music selection for Christina Atkinson, who is celebrating her birthday today. And hopefully it is a good one. Somebody that has caused my day to already be off to a great start has just wandered into the studio.
Stand by for the Other Side of Midnight's news.
From New York City, the Other Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. There was this terrifying plunge on a LATAM Airlines Boeing 787 Dreamliner flight earlier this week, or now it's really last week. And the plane all of a sudden just went into nosedive mode. Mm. People who were standing up, some of them hit the ceiling of the plane. Nobody hurt seriously, so that's the good news. And of course, there was an incident investigation. First of all, it's Boeing. Everybody's freaking out right. about there's been some incidents with Boeing recently. Now they come to find out what happened was there was a flight attendant who was serving one of the pilots of dinner. And when she went in to lean to give him his tray of dinner, she fell and she pushed a button that puts the plane into nosedive.
Oh, my.
Now, there's a couple questions here. Did you know there was a button on a plane that puts it into nosedive?
No, I didn't.
Second question is, why is there a button on the plane that puts into nosedive? Now, by the way, I could not get answers to either of these questions. I tried, but apparently there's something that's right next to the seat that the pilot can push. So this woman accidentally pushes the button as she's serving the meal. The plane goes instantly down. He's able, thankfully, to take control of the plane. It lands safely. So I tell you this story because we've had so many of these stories over the last couple of weeks. But let me put your fears to rest. There's been all kinds of studies done, and you won't be shocked probably to hear this, that in the end, it's still incredibly safe to take a plane. People are freaking out. They're like, oh, I don't want to take a Boeing flight. You hear about travelers who have booked trips and then they see that it's on a Boeing flight. They go to another airline or they ask the airline, hey, is there any other airplanes that you fly? A fair amount of people are doing this. Not millions, but there's thousands of people who have asked to have their flights changed. And when all said and done, there were 9.6 million flights taken last year. That's a lot, right?
Yeah. Sure.
And there has not been an accident on an American airline or a fatal one in 15 years. That's an incredible safety
record.
Pretty
good. Absolutely.
And almost every day, there's something that happens on a flight, like a cracked windshield. Things happen.
Right. So this anti-Semitic rant the other day.
Oh, what was that?
A guy getting into an argument with the flight attendant. Really unhinged person.
Right. And so the thought is that here's the issue, is now we're freaking out that it's not safe to fly. And there's nothing that could be further from the truth. If you have 9.6 million flights last year that all landed safely, you haven't had an accident on an American airline in 15 years. I'm knocking on wood. 15 years. That's an incredible track record. And here's the issue, is that, of course, we in the news business and everywhere else trying to fill the void of this constant news cycle 24/7, we want the clicks, we want people watching, we want people listening. And so we report every single possible incident that we see, especially in a moment where something happens with Boeing.
Now, sure.
Granted, it's a big deal when a door opens on a flight, but it happens. It's a big deal when somebody freaks out on a flight and yells at a flight attendant, but it happens. Mm-hmm. They tie them up. The issue is, in the end of the day, it's still the safest form of travel. One, you know, you're much more likely to get into a deadly car crash. The National Safety Council estimates that Americans have 1 in 93 chance of dying in a car crash. But your chance of you dying on a plane, nobody's dying on an American airliner in 15 years.
You know, it's funny. I've recently had on this program talking about the problems with Boeing. Both Christine Negroni, who's an author and investigative journalist, and John Banzaff, who's a law professor, but also is an engineer and has patents. He's just a brilliant guy. And both of them, incredibly critical of Boeing, and both of them said the same thing separately that you just said, which is you're much more likely to get into an accident or a deadly accident on the way driving to the airport.
Of course.
Than you are on the airplane.
You know, we're not quick to report car accidents,
right,
because
they happen all
so
the time.
Many
right.
of them. You know, at some point you say, okay. And unfortunately, you just do the really heinous ones, or somebody involves somebody famous, somebody well known. But in the end of the day, you're still safe flying. The reason you're seeing so many of these stories is because they're incredibly clickable. Anybody, especially when you're in a mode like this where there's something happening with Boeing, people see that word Boeing, they click on it right away. And of course, that's great for the news business. So you're safe. You're
Thank
okay.
you.
If you're flying anywhere, you're okay.
You know, how often do you fly? I know you have family. Abroad.
You know, quite often, actually.
Well, how often is that? Once a month? Once every 6 months?
You know, well, lately it's been maybe 4 times a year, 5 times a year.
Okay. Well, so that's pretty regular. When I flew in from Florida recently, and boy, were my arms tired. No, it was kind of a turbulent flight back to New York. You know, not a big deal, just turbulence. When the plane landed at Newark Liberty International Airport, there were many people on the plane applauding, which is something that I've seen, but I haven't seen it in a while, and I'm curious what your experience is when you're flying, how often that happens when you land, the people applaud. Is it a New York thing? Is it a turbulent flight thing? Or is it an everywhere thing?
I've had it both. So I actually told this story on the air on Saturday morning here on WABC about how I got on this incredibly turbulent flight, and then, of course, Curtis Sliwa used in his show 100 times to make fun of me. But what happened was I was on this incredibly turbulent flight where they told us this is going to be really bad. And this woman leaned over to me and she said, "Do you mind if I hold your hand? I'm very nervous." And I was, of course. So I held her hand. And then as it got really incredible, like it was one of those ones that you see in the viral videos where the overhead compartments start opening up and luggage is coming out. She said, "Do you mind if I hug you?"
Oh.
And I was like,
I
you know
I've
what?
Heard you mention this.
This
actually.
Might be my last hug. I'm fine with it. Yeah. But thankfully, we landed okay. So that one, people went crazy.
Have you stayed in touch with that lady?
I have not. But then someone called in to say that I was the one who sat next to their mother on the plane to thank me. How
nice.
Weird is that,
that's
right?
That's nice.
So that one, of course, people went crazy when the plane landed. Like it was a standing ovation. I find on international flights, they get a lot of applause.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that's about.
Huh.
A lot of applause on international flights, not so much on domestic ones.
Interesting.
But yeah, I've been on planes where people applaud.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. What else do you have for us?
So children who show aggressive behavior in the classroom, the SNOO study out, really interesting, from a group in the UK. They did a 5-decade study about how kids do in the classroom if they're bullies. And what they found out over 50 years of following these kids is that the bullies make the most money, are the most successful in the workplace, and the ones that you coddle in the classroom are less likely to make a lot of money.
I saw this story and I was really bummed about it. I hate to see these bullies. I mean, I assume many of them, if not most of them, get reformed, but I hate to see these bullies doing better than the kids they're bullying.
Yeah, well, 7,000 people they followed. So this is no small study. Born in 1970, they followed them until they were 46 in 2016. And I mean, it's really amazing. It's this British cohort study. And they found that the kids that were problems that needed to be scolded by teachers were the ones who then figured out in the workplace, hey, wait a minute, if I'm as aggressive as I was in the classroom in the workplace, I'm going to succeed. And so it makes you rethink, like, what are we doing? We're right. trying to, obviously you want to protect kids who are incredibly bullied, right? But the thought is those kids who are protecting in this study anyway, who are bullied, are the ones who are going to fail when they get older.
Yeah. Did the authors of this study have any recommendations for how to change, you know, interacting with children or dealing with bullied children?
Yes. So a lot of it had to do with the teachers and how they teach the class and how they control the class. And so some of that was these bullies said if the teachers had a better handle on the class and what was going on in the playground, in the classroom when their head was turned around, things might have been better for mm-hmm. those kids who were bullied. But in terms of how kids, you know, how what will happen in the future in terms of these people who, if you let bullies be bullies, which in some cases they did. Now we find out that they were quite successful in the workplace years later. So I don't know. I have no answer in terms of how that's going to change teaching or how now we're in this mode right now where, you know, it's all about bullying. I know my kids get this all the time in the classroom. They're told, don't be bullies. And, you know, they have to watch instructional videos. But here you see the study that those guys, these kids end up being incredibly successful.
I guess tell kids to totally disregard that.
Right? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. One last one. Harrison Ford. He's talked about this in the past, but he can't believe how many times this has happened to him. So the latest one, Harrison Ford, of course, most famous for the Indiana Jones movies. I mean, he's had a slew and Star Wars, but he's had a slew of successes. But he says Indiana Jones follows him around like no other movie.
Sure.
So recently he goes into a surgery center to have a colonoscopy. And so he's getting ready to lie down on the table. And all of a sudden he hears this out of the speakers. Of course, this is the theme to Indiana Jones.
Naturally.
So he's like, oh my, I can't get away from this song. I'm about to go under. I'm about to have a colonoscopy. And this is what they're playing in the surgery
Did
room.
They play it intentionally because it's him?
No.
Oh my. That's wild.
Isn't that crazy?
That's very
He said it is countless times that's happened where he's gone in. He's had one other time for surgery. They were playing it. It was not intentional. They knew he was coming in, but they just have a soundtrack they like to listen to, and that's one of them. But he says, I can't tell you how many times that song has followed me around in my career.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Did you see the new Indiana Jones?
I did not.
I saw it. I liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Huh, I'll have to go see it. I mean, yeah. I love the other ones.
Yeah, it's not as good as the first three, but far better than the fourth one.
Huh, okay.
So, but it was good. It was really, really interesting.
I'll have to check it out.
Please do. Thank you, Noam.
Sure.
And now you know the rest of the story.
And, you know, we're still monitoring the fallout from this horrible terrorist attack in Moscow. The death toll in this mass shooting at a popular concert venue outside Moscow has now risen to about 140, with more than 150 others wounded. And this really marks the country's deadliest terrorist attack in 2 decades, with rescue workers saying heavy fire damage continues to impede the search efforts. I tried to look at some of the footage and I had to stop because it's just so graphic and so atrocious. But this attack was quickly claimed by a group known as ISIS-K, which is short for ISIS Khorasan, which is an offshoot of the broader ISIS. Not exactly the same as the big ISIS, but It's operating out of parts of Afghanistan, Iran, and Turkmenistan. And they say that the group has targeted Russia because of its treatment of Muslims inside the country and its involvement in Syria. Assad is very tough on these Islamic terrorists, and the Russians are very supportive of Assad. The group was also responsible for dual January bombings in Iran, as well as the bombing of the Kabul airport during the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. And I look at this, and I don't want to, you know, get on a soapbox here, but you look, these are the, you know, the withdrawal from Afghanistan, that terrorist attack resulted in the killing of 13 American servicemen and close to 170 Afghans. And you just really think they're attacking Americans, they're attacking the Afghans, they're attacking the Russians. Think of what a potent force there would be for defeating and beating back ISIS-K if the United States and Russia were to work together. Yet, given what's happening in the world now, it's unfortunately completely unlikely, putting it mildly. As of now, four suspects have been charged with committing acts of terrorism. So, all right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Norman is in Brooklyn. Hi, Norman.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, that's a beautiful idea, Frank, with Russia and the U.S., but, I mean, that's how we defeated the Nazis in World War II.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, yes, it would be beautiful if we could go back to those days. But it doesn't seem like that. All right. To a lighter note, I used to turn myself orange all the time, Frank, with overdosing on beta carotene. They used to sell them in bodybuilding magazines, suntan pills. From what I can tell, it wasn't particularly dangerous. But yeah, I would turn all sorts of strange colors, like a brick red to kind of an orange color, depending on the quality of the beta carotene.
You know, it's funny. My insurance salesman, Catherine, because when Carmine was first born, he really liked sweet potatoes and he really liked carrots. And she told me, and at first I thought she was joking, and then she told me she wasn't joking. She told me, be careful how much sweet potatoes and carrots that I let him eat.
Sure.
Because she said her son loved both of those things and he turned into Donald Trump's color. In your case, when you would take the beta carotene capsules, mm-hmm. were you taking the beta carotene to build body mass or to make your skin?
No. I was taking, I'm a pale faced Ashkenazi Jew, and I was taking it to when I was, you know, it's bodybuilding, powerlifting, whatever. You know, it looked, you know, the whole thing about being tan. You know, we got to look tan. So, you know, my skin, unless I put tanning lotion on, which was sticky and disgusting
sure.
at the time. So, and I didn't really tan. I mean, you know, I could spend the summer in the Caribbean, come back, and nobody could tell. So, you know,
taking beta carotene actually gives you a tan.
Yeah, well, they sold it for that. They sold them in the bodybuilding magazines as suntan pills. Hmm. And you would take it. It would take like at least a week or two to build up in your body. And then lo and behold, people would say to me, what's up with your skin? You're getting kind of, I mean, it wasn't like I wasn't brown. It wouldn't make me brown, but it would make me kind of like a reddish, deep kind of red, kind of gave me a ruddy appearance. The two people that promoted that was Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. Do you remember them?
I know the name, but no, I don't. I can't
say. They were kind of this burnt out looking hippie couple where apparently the guy was some MIT engineer and they used to go on Johnny Carson or I think Leno at the time and talk about, you know, all sorts of whacked out nutritional ideas. They were popular in the 80s and 90s. Dirk Pearson, Sandy Shaw.
Well, thanks for that, Norman. I appreciate that. And, you know, today, you know, I have been going crazy in the Other Side of Midnight online store. And you can check out the stuff that's there. There's some really cool stuff. but a box arrived yesterday, and I just got a new Racket Report t-shirt. I'm wearing it now. All sorts of other cool stuff. If you want to check it out, you can go to store.othersideofmidnightshow.com. And I'm told they're adding more. And I did a wallet diet on Friday. I have a notoriously thick wallet. You know, sometimes people have said I have similar mannerisms to George Costanza. Honestly, the thing about me that is most similar to George Costanza is the size of my wallet. And I was with this group of friends on Friday, and everyone was making fun of me. And everyone says, what do you have in there? So I took out a substantial amount of stuff, and I, you know, for instance, I had two library cards in there. One was expired, took out that. I had, you know, discount cards like, you know, buy 10 smoothies, get one free that are places that are no longer in business, took those out. PBA cards and SBA cards from 2017 and 2018, took those out. And I feel like the wallet is much smaller now. And honestly, I almost didn't recognize it. But I had it at this Blue Lives Matter gala on Saturday, and I took it out to tip the, you know, the coat check girl or the valet. And a friend of mine, my friend Jen, she says, oh, what is with that wallet? Now, this is the new skinny wallet. How is all this relevant? Well, a box of swag for our show arrives at our house yesterday. And my wife just looks at this box and she sees that I purchased two hats, one t-shirt, one hoodie, and one non-hooded sweatshirt. And she says, your drawers can already not close. She says, I'm really proud of you for doing this wallet diet. This week, we need to do a drawer diet and get rid of all the stuff that is just old or has holes in it and whatever else. And now I'm dreading it. I'm not, I think part of me is a hoarder. I'm not joking. Every single thing that was taken out of this wallet on Friday, not every single thing, but item after item, I'm not talking about, you know, a receipt that I had in, stuck in there, but item after item, I didn't want to get rid of. And everyone's making fun of me and everything. So I'm really not looking forward to the prospect of going through these drawers and have my wife pressure me to get rid of all these shirts and everything. But I guess that's what I have to do to make room for all these other side of midnight t-shirts that I've been buying. So there's some cool stuff on there. You can understand why I've been buying it. And if you do end up buying anything on there, if you use the promo code Frank15, you can save 15% off on whatever you purchase. So this is some cool stuff. I hope you check it out. I'm wearing it, and I'm decked out in all sorts of online other side of midnight gear, which I had some other ideas that I hope they implement, which I'm going to have to buy those if they do implement them. So we'll see. All right, we'll do 15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. Time now for you to be heard for 15 seconds at 800-848-9222 as part of
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Mike!
Morning, Frank. Today is Pay Your Fines Day. $400 million in cash. He should pay in pennies. Best I can calculate, that's 40 billion pennies. I'd load them in a cement truck, imagine the sound of them turning slowly in that drum, and then rolling down the chute in front of AG's office. I see plenty of rapping in her future, and it's not the 50 cent kind.
Leo!
Top of the morning, Mr. Morano. May I call you Francis?
Please.
You know, the last caller, Francis, he kind of stole my thunder, but I could give you a little something else. I was going to say perhaps Sunny Delight is on the menu at the Trump Castle.
E. Frank.
Yes, Frank, the respectable chairwoman of Cultural Affairs at Friends Meeting House in Flushing, Queens, and our honorable mayor, Eric Adams, a good Christian Baptist, they have no respect for Cardinal Dolan.
Raji.
Oh, if only the great savior, Pat Buchanan, were our president, we'd have suffered neither 9/11 nor Afghanistan nor the illegal invasion.
Eddie.
Oh. Good morning, Frank. Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shore, incredibly intelligent medical researchers, wrote a book before the internet, Life Extension, A Practical Approach, all about free radicals and antioxidants.
Thank you, Eddie. Frank Moreno, good day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.